what we've been talking about this summer when I'm here is, entry points. And it's so critical to understand that Satan just wants to get into your life. Once he gets in, he's in. And you let him in. And it's extremely hard to get out at that point. Great book, if you want to read it, is called The Holy War. It's a book that really describes how Satan works at getting into your life. It was written by John Bunyan, who also wrote Pilgrim's Progress. And basically wrote it while he was in jail. And basically being abused by every stretch of the imagination because he loved Jesus. And he wrote the book, The Holy War, which is a phenomenal book. And so I encourage you to think in those terms, because Satan is trying to get into your life in a host of different ways. And as I described yesterday, if you are not going to take the easy path, if you're not going to allow Satan to destroy you, then you are going to intentionally make other choices. That you are going to intentionally make the choice to spend time with God. You're going to intentionally make the choice to love other people. Use your you're going to start making decisions that are intentional rather than just grab you and you just do them. And you will find, and some of you already asked me yesterday, well, if you're in the cylinder, the democracy, the inclusion, the normal, the tolerance, if you're in the easy one, how do you get out? Well, you don't, actually. Once you're in there, boy, it's tough. Because it's just straight down, you fall, and everybody is with you, and you're going to have to go against all of that to get out of it. The only way to get out of it is to say, I can't get out of it, and allow God to lift you out of it. You have to come to the end of yourself and start listening to what God has to say. And I want to keep going in Philippians here and go through some more verses. The key verse for these couple days anyway was, Matthew 7, for by the narrow gate, for there is a gate that is wide and a way that is easy that leads to destruction. And again, that is one of Satan's great tools. The easy path leads to destruction. Very important to see that. Philippians 3:13, brothers, I do not consider that I have made it on my own. But one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead. Remember, what we're doing is looking at the Apostle Paul. This is giving us insight into somebody who knows what he's talking about. And he's saying, here's what I've learned. Here's what I have learned. Here's what our generation, your generation in America has really failed at, if there's any failure. My generation has failed at teaching you, and you have failed at wanting to sit around and just talk to people that can teach you. See, it used to work that way, where you would sit around and listen. You had nothing else to do. Little House on the Prairie days. Pa would bring out his fiddle and you'd play a little bit and everyone would, tap their foot or something. But basically you'd sit around and talk and you would have all kinds of generations there to talk to. Today we're so isolated in our generations. You are actually consumed with people your own age. And then when you're not, you're watching people who live pretend lives in the media, that kind of stuff. And that has an impact, believe it or not. And so what we want to do with the Apostle Paul is understand the Apostle Paul is saying, this is real life. This is what I've learned. This is how it actually works. Brothers, I do not consider that I've made it on my own. But one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead. All of you will have a temptation in life to think that you've done something or become something or are something that God can't use because of something that's happened in the past. And that's not true. That is absolutely not true. God is desirous to forgive people. He is not desirous to punish people. Of all people that should have been totally ashamed and not thinking they could be used, it would be the Apostle Peter. And again, if you understand what happened there, he went out, he abandoned God, he basically denied God, abandoned God, went out in a boat. Jesus had to come after him and say, get over here. And three times, he again admitted that he wasn't doing things right. And Jesus said, go feed my sheep. If you get the message from that little passage, what you're understanding is, Peter, it's not about you, it's about me, so you can do this. So even if Peter was a failure, even if Peter didn't do things right, he could make it right by making it about God. And that's very important for us to understand. Entry points from this verse. Remember, Satan will be on the opposite side of everything that's right. And he will be on the opposite side in an acceptable manner. In other words, he's going to try and get in your life in a way that you'll let him. And in this verse, it's very simple. Americans basically live their lives saying, I will take care of myself, make my own way, pull myself up on my own bootstraps. I am, you know, if you ever heard about the American dream, you've heard people come here for the American dream. What is the American dream? Self-centeredness? People come here so that they can do what they want, get what they want, be who they want. See, now that doesn't sound so bad to some people, except for the fact that Jesus had a story in the Bible about the rich fool who basically lived the American dream. Remember, he had so much, he worked so hard, he had so many resources that he had to tear down his barn and build a new barn so he could hold all the stuff for himself. And what was he saying there? Then I can do what? Eat, drink, and be merry. Then I don't have to answer anybody. I don't need anything. I don't need anybody. I can just live the life I want. I got to a certain place in life where I have all that I need, and I don't have to deal with anybody else. I can do what I want. Retirement. And God said, you fool. Whoa. Now, I didn't say that. God did. So that's pretty important to grasp. The American dream is that. I mean, all of you, when you start working one day, we're just talking about helping inner city people, whatever. When you start working one day, I promise you this, you will probably make more money than you need. In America, you do. Very, very few Americans actually make less than they need. I know you say, well, what about all the poor people? Well, it their satellite dish and their cell phone and their, I mean, I'm talking about need here. You will make more than you need. You think that one day when you and I stand before God, we're going to stand before him and he's going to say, yeah, according to the American culture, you did pretty good. Or is he going to, does he have his eye on those who make $12 a year in Africa? And you're coming saying, I have this need. I have a need for this. I have a need for this. And I have all this money. I have all these needs. And the guy in Africa just would like to make sure he has a fish for supper. So we're a different culture. Yeah, I understand. You see, what Satan does, he works in a very slow but methodical way to get us away from understanding the absolutes that are more indicative of being in that funnel rather than the cylinder. You see, the absolutes are very simple. Today, God gives Dave Wager a certain amount of resource, health and money and whatever, I mean, a certain amount of resource. What is Dave Wager going to use it for? Did he give it to Dave Wager so that Dave Wager could be self-centered? Did he give it to me so I could be self-indulgent? Is that why he gave it to me? See, Americans, you know, it's kind of an interesting study for your age group, what actually a little older than you guys, but the study's very clear that Americans believe as they grow up that they have to have certain things. They have to have a car, they have to have a cell phone, they have to have sports vision or whatever. I mean, they have to have those things. The interesting thing is all of those things take from you, don't give back. And God doesn't work that way. When he talked about investing, he didn't even talk about investing money. He talked about investing in things that last for eternity. What is it that lasts for eternity? People. God says, you want to live the way you were made to live? You invest in people. What does that mean? People are important to you. What does that mean? I give them what they want? No, you don't give them what you want. You help them learn and develop and become what they should become. If you have resources, you use your resources for them. That's what you do. If you see a need, and you can help that need, you take care of that. Well, it doesn't mean you enable people to do bad things. That's not what the Bible teaches, but you help people with what you have. That's why Christians are good at adoptions. That's why Christians are good at helping the poor around the world be fed. Because, see, our assets are to be used to help others be better. Say, well, what about me? Well, you might have less, actually, than your counterparts. The reason you wouldn't want less is because the world has already set up the standard. You already have to have a certain cell phone, and you already have to have a certain car, and you have to have sports channels. But what if you don't? What if you go against that? What is the American dream? What's God's dream for you? Is it similar to the American dream? I remember I went to dinner once with a guy and I had to meet him he invited me to his home to eat, but then he called me up at the last minute because I was speaking out in Minnesota. And he said, well, I don't have a home right now, so why don't you meet me at this restaurant? You don't have a home? No, I'm living in a motel right now. Okay. Went and visited with him. I said, what's with the motel thing? You had a home. He goes, I know, but my wife and I thought it's way too big. We could cram our family in half the size of that house. And then we could give half the mortgage to someone else. Oh, yeah, never thought of it that way. So temporarily, he was building a new home that was going to be half the price and half the size. You see, and yeah, people would have to be crowded for a little bit. But see, what you have to understand is even the Apostle Paul, as he talks here, he's not saying that he's arrived. He's not saying that he's the one that makes it. He says, I haven't. And then, the funnel, the intentional one is, I'm depraved and have no hope on my own. See, that's different than I've arrived and I can make it on my own. I can make my own decisions. I can do my own thing. No. The truth of the matter is that Dave Wager is incapable of making anything good happen in this world. Only God can do that. Now Satan would love to get into my head and say, oh, come on now, you're a little harsh on yourself. Am I? Or am I just realistic? You don't know how many people in the last few years have come to me and just asked, what is it that I need to learn to be in a position like yours someday? And I said, well, basically, you have to be incompetent at most things. And they laugh. They say, no, I really mean it. And I say, so do I. Why? Well, because if you really look at what I'm doing in life, if you look at what God's given me to do, I just make everyone else successful around me. Steve Sanford, he'll run the NBI, and Brad, he runs the camp, and Steve Tice, he runs Canada, and I just sit in my office and look pretty. You know? No, that's not exactly what I do, but in the whole process of things, you see, if you would see that I'm not a very good builder, so Dan Betts has to do that, and Troy has to do that. What's really interesting is that God took somebody like myself, and he allows me to write books and teach and that kind of thing, and I was that football hockey player in college who could care less, never even read a book in high school, was not a great student. See, it's all God's joke in a way. I will never be able to tell you that I do what I do because I've been able to discipline myself and I'm really good at what I do. I can't tell you that. I will tell you this, though, that I do love God and he will use somebody who makes himself available to him. If you sit in MBI classes, you will see how many words I mispronounce and things I misspell and things I can't do. But that doesn't mean I don't love you and want you to understand God. You see, all that stuff isn't what makes you a good person or a good teacher. What makes you is that you love God and you walk with God. That's what makes it. Anybody that begins to think, I am going to make myself into somebody, will be a loser. You can't. In fact, I will guarantee you this. The day that you start depending on your talent and your ability and your money, and your God will prove to you that you cannot trust those things. Because you can't. He'll prove it. I don't know how many rich men now I've talked to in my men's conferences that I do and that kind of thing who have told me they are totally empty and they are millionaires. Why? Because they thought at some point they would be okay. They would pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, do their own work, and they realize that everything is empty. Yeah, just like Ecclesiastes. Read through Ecclesiastes. Solomon basically was saying, you know what? I have it all. I have it all. Everything. Vanity, vanity. Why? Because there is no great purpose in all those things. What is the great purpose in loving God? See, God made you a certain way, and Satan gets an entry point by making you think that you need to be self-reliant. In fact, many of you got advice from parents and grandparents and school teachers. You got to make something of yourself. You got to go out. You. It's all focused on you. You know what? If you want to focus on what you need to do, love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. When you look at other people, love them. Care for them more than you care for yourself. And all of a sudden, things will fall into place, I promise. So the Apostle Paul says, brothers, I do not consider that I've made it. Of all people that should have considered that they have made it, I would think that would be Paul. Why? How many of you has God asked to write the Bible? I mean, if I were putting like made it, not made it, Paul would be on the list of made it. He doesn't consider himself to have made it. Huh. Interesting. I talked about that a little bit yesterday. It's like God didn't make you to make it on this earth. This isn't where you're going to be able to say, I finally arrived. It's going to be the next life. If you're going to allow Satan that entry point, it's going to be the independence. I'll take care of myself. I'll make my own decisions. That's really hard, by the way, for many of you in the age group, because it's a natural thing for you at a certain age to want to break away from your parents. See, that's a pretty natural thing. I'm not saying you should ever disrespect them. If you disrespect your parents, that's incorrect. But it's not unusual for you to say, I don't want to be under the roof anymore. I don't want them to, you know, have... That's very natural, because at some point, you need to be on your own. And if you get married, you need to establish a brand new home. It needs to be separate from the one you were in. That kind of thing. That's healthy. That's okay. I'm not talking about that aspect of life. What I'm talking about is God never made you to be independent of Him. Never. And so the entry point for the cylinder is independence. I want to think for myself. I want to be free. I want to do what I want to do. The entry point for the funnel is I am depraved, and on my own I can do nothing. Next. I am a failure, unusable, unaccessible. It's funny, it goes to the other side here. A lot of us will look at our lives and say, I've already made enough mistakes where I shouldn't be used of God. No, that's not true. Now, there is a time, I've heard people say that God never, ever gives up on people, and I'm not using the word gives up, but there are times where God says, Sodom and Gomorrah, you're done. Boom, gone. So anyone that was in Sodom and Gomorrah at that time, they didn't get a second chance after that one. They had second chances before that, but they didn't get another one. So if you would like to pretend that God will never, ever, ever say that's enough, then you're pretending. Because God does say that's enough. Especially to those of us who live in America. We have the Bible. We have so many Christian radio stations. We have so much that is available to us so we can know God. If I'm God and I look at an American and says, I just don't know you, God, it's like, bam, get out of here. You have had every opportunity in the world to know me, but you haven't taken it. You know, so it's very important to understand that all of us in America, if we really look at our lives carefully, we think, man, I have not been who I should be. I have failed. And that failure can destroy you. See, that can just destroy you. That's Satan's entry point. What Satan wants you to do is focus on your failures and your sin. What God wants you to do is focus on His mercy and His grace. When you start focusing on your failures and your sin, you can't get out of the cylinder. When you start focusing on His mercy and His grace, that's different. Now you have opportunity to move. You see, the intentional entry point would be, God is rich in mercy, I will call upon Him. There are people today who have grown up in the church and they have made some very serious mistakes. And they believe that God would not forgive them or they shouldn't be used. Look at the Apostle Paul. What did he do before he became a Christian? He wasn't even named Paul. He was named Saul. He watched Stephen get killed. He was out there murdering people. Of all people that shouldn't have written the Bible, he's at the top of the list too, on two things. He would be at the top of the list of those who made it. He's also on the top of the list of those who really disqualified himself. Only he didn't disqualify himself. Because it was never about him. It was about God. Of all the people in the world that would understand the mercy and grace of God, who would that be? The Apostle Paul. You know what? If you have failed God in your past, if you have not lived like you should, of all people in the world that should be able to explain mercy and grace to other people, it should be you. See, I just made you more qualified. And if you're using it to be unqualified, then you're using a satanic lie. He got into your life, and now you're going to beat yourself up. You're going to suffer from all kinds of depressions, anxieties, that kind of stuff. Why? Because you're going to feel like you're not worthy. Oh, by the way, you're not. God's worthy. And He has chosen you to be worthy with Him. Let Him do it. See, I mean, it's that easy. You need to choose the right entry point. It's not the entry point of I'm a failure. It's the entry point of God is rich in mercy. Another entry point of the cylinder, I will go wherever the road takes me. Again, we talked about this a little bit. I'm going to just, you know, I'm going to get up in the morning, wherever today goes, it goes. I'm telling you something. You look at the Apostle Paul. He talks about having purpose in every single step that he has. When Jesus said, if you're going to be a follower of mine, and by the way, we're not Christians, we're followers of Jesus. Christian is a term that's hard to understand in this culture. As followers of Jesus, what does he say? If you're going to follow me, do what? Pick up your cross. How often? Daily. And do what? Follow me. Is that intentional? Yeah, you're not going to accidentally pick up your cross and follow him. That's not going to happen accidentally. The cross, what was the cross? It was Jesus' purpose for coming here to this earth. What does that connotation make to you? You have a purpose for coming to this earth. What are you supposed to do? You're supposed to pick up that purpose every day. Can you do that and just slide through and say whatever? No, you can't do that. You have a purpose today. You might be sitting there going, what is it? What is it? You know, and pick up this piece of paper, do that. What's my purpose for today? Well, you know, if you don't know your specific purpose, I can tell you what your general purpose is. Today you are alive and you are breathing so you can glorify God. Well, what does that mean? That means that anybody that talks to you today, anybody that has any interaction with you today, you show them who God is by how you respond. See, that I know for sure. And in that process, when you position yourself like that, then God will begin to give you opportunities. You know, if you go and you say, like, I'm just going to go wherever. I'm not sure where I'm headed. I just know I'm... See, that's that other cylinder, man. You're just all falling together, going nowhere, and at the end you're going to come out, and you're not going to like where you come out. It's not okay to just say, I'm just going. Some of you say, well, I would like to be a teacher someday. Then get ready to go to college. You can't be a teacher without a teaching certificate. You need to go do that. You know, if you want to start heading in a direction. Very important. The intentional one. I will seek him and his ways for my life. See, I'm going to seek God. I'm actually going to look for God's ways and implement them. Philippians 3:14, I press toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Apostle Paul, very intentional. I'm pressing towards the goal. What is the goal? The goal is to be able to hear, well done. The goal is to have Jesus stand when you die and honor the fact that you're his son, daughter, coming to heaven. The goal is that others go with you because that's what you invest in. Satan wants you to get, see the entry point in the cylinder thing, Satan wants you to be thinking, no. You know what? Dave's just way up too tight. You just got to enjoy this world, man. You got to enjoy life. You got to let it go where it goes. Fine, try that. See how it works. It really doesn't work. The 15th verse, Philippians 3:15. Let those of us who are mature think this way. That's very interesting. Now, some of you might be saying, I don't think that way. Well, you should. And one day you will if you mature up. The interesting thing is that when I speak to the 57-year-old man, as I speak to you, I don't expect you to think like a 57-year-old guy. I don't expect you to understand how a 57-year-old guy thinks. But what you need to do is say, wow, there's a guy that's been around a few years in ministry and works with thousands of people and knows God and reads the Bible. And what does he understand? See, at one point, you have to understand something. There are people in your life that really will not benefit or not get hurt if you go out and be an idiot. Them personally, I mean. Some of you, you can leave camp at the end of the summer and you can go do horrendous things. And the truth of the matter is, Dave Wager may never even hear about it. I may not even know about it. I'm probably going to still eat spaghetti and go to sleep and stuff and not even know what's going on. So, but here's the deal. See, if you have people in your life that are older that you can begin to understand that they have been through a journey that can help you get through yours, and you position yourself so that you can get through the journey better by listening and being a part of their life, then you will benefit. See, what Paul is saying is, you know, I understand that there are some people that aren't going to agree with this. And by the way, if you don't agree with the Bible, you're just wrong. And basically, the Apostle Paul is saying, I understand this. I understand that people are going to say, no, I don't agree. Like what? What are you going to do? Have democracy? You're going to get together and all believe something else? See, those are the entry points to the easy side. Because what God says is not easy to understand, and it is not easy to live. Because Stephen took a beating. Noah took a beating, probably for 100 years. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego face the furnace. Daniel faced the lions. There's nothing that says that following God is the easy route on your body. It's the intentional route. And because your body screams to do the easy route, you have to be so intentional about keeping doing that. Paul says, let those of us who are mature think this way. And if anything you think otherwise, God will reveal that also to you. Only let us hold true to what we have attained. Interesting that he talks that way. I know there's a lot of times someone will come and say, well, I just think I'm going to do this. And the only thing I can say is, go ahead. And then I usually ask them, would you come and see me in 10 years and tell me how it worked? Because I'm going to tell you that what you're doing right now will destroy you. Oh, yeah, you're arrogant. No. I just know if you beat your head on a rock, you get a headache, really. It happens. And you can say all you want about you're not going to get a headache, but I've been around long enough and worked with, I know you're going to get a headache. And if, yeah, well, you're trying to stop me from, I'm trying to stop you from falling in the cylinder with everybody else. If you want to go find a bunch of other people to fall with, you're going to find them. And you're never going to get out of it because you're going to justify. In fact, in 2 Timothy, if you remember last year what I was talking, 2 Timothy, Paul tells Timothy, yeah, reprove, rebuke, exhort. And by the way, Timothy, be patient because people are going to listen to whoever they want to anyway. They're going to go listen to the popular. They're going to listen to whoever they want to. And they're going to be doing the easy thing for them. They're not going to do the challenging thing for them. The Apostle Paul here is saying, I either agree with me or you're wrong. Interesting. One of the entry points to disaster is you don't need mentoring. You don't need older people in your life. The intentional one is, I want to submit. I will find a mentor who knows God and has learned to submit and spend time with him or spend time with her. Everybody in this room should have somebody in their life that is older than them that's mentoring them. And you know what? It'd be great if it were parents, but most likely it's not going to be because you have a different relationship with them. It should probably be outside your family. It should be same gender. You ladies should have a lady in your life that is older than you. The Bible makes it very clear. If you ever want to be a wife, the Bible makes it clear that the older Christian wives are to teach the younger Christian wives how to love their husbands. That's what their job is. And the older men are to teach young men to be respectful and love their wives like Christ loved the church. See, that's how it works. When you push out that aspect, one of the great, great hallmarks of Christianity is submission. If you are not a submitter, you are going to be miserable, I promise. In other words, not a submitter to just anybody's whims or whatever, but if you do not submit to God and you do not submit to each other, that means what you're doing is going through life looking at yourself and making yourself the focus of energy, of your energy. You weren't made to do that, so you'll be miserable. All of you should be practicing submission. If you had somebody older in your life that was with you and they were guiding, giving you, now I'm not saying they would be perfect, by the way, but you would pick somebody, if they're going to be a mentor of yours, that actually spends time in the Bible, that actually has a marriage that works, that actually has some fruit so that you can see that they're walking with God. And then you tell them, I want to submit to you. I want to be and have somebody in my life who's looking over what I do, and you be honest with them and talk to them and see what happens. Very important. A generation that grows up without mentors, you educate yourself. You talk to, when you're in third grade, you spend all your time with third graders, and you miss out all the wisdom that comes from the fourth graders because you're only with that group. You see, it's easy to say, I don't need mentoring. I'm just going to hang out with people who see the world like I do. You know what happens when you do that? Maturity is delayed by a lot. Because maturity demands that you start looking at the world from the correct perspective and not from just your own perspective. Maturity demands that you see that the world doesn't revolve around you. And when you're a baby, you start the world with everything revolving around you. Anyone here remember when you were born that day? I don't know why we don't remember that. But I remember my kids being born. They were quite self-centered. I mean, anytime they wanted something, they just moaned. That's how we start in this world, self-centered. And then there used to be this adolescent period. In the adolescent period, which nobody ever likes to talk about, but it's the period in life where you learn that the world doesn't revolve around you. So you're born and the world revolves around you. You got a diaper, you're hungry, you just moan, and people have to run and grab you. And so you kind of get used to that. In fact, some people have trouble being trained, you know, potty trained. Just, I like going in my diaper. You know, why do I have to figure out how to do it this other way? That's how self-centered we are. And then eventually, see, there comes a point where a young child has to learn that the world doesn't revolve around them. Years ago, it was about 12, 13 years old. Because that's when they started working the farm and working the family business and that kind of thing. They started to realize that, really, you got to work hard. Now, believe it or not, the psychologists are telling us that it's 30 years old. Why is that age raised so high before you realize the world doesn't revolve around you? Because there's no mentors in your life that are telling you the world doesn't revolve around you. In fact, it's the opposite. They have different terms like helicopter parents and people making sure their kids have everything they want and making sure, see, instead of allowing you to grow up and realize what you need to realize, you need in your life a mentor. If you don't have a mentor, I would find one. You also need to be a mentor. There's more than one way to be right is an easy way into the easy cylinder. You know, it's interesting, you hear the Apostle Paul say, look, if you don't agree with me, you're wrong. Look, there are some things, if you don't agree with, you're just wrong. I don't care how many other people you get to agree with you. We already talked about it, democracy, that kind of thing, gets in the wrong cylinder. See, the Apostle Paul, how do you like it when somebody speaks and says, look, you either listen to me or you're wrong? I mean, immediately in all of our lives you go, I don't think I like you. Who makes you think you're right all the time? I remember I was speaking to a bunch of ladies who were not believers and giving them the gospel, and one of the ladies stopped me in the middle and said, so why do you think you're right and we're all wrong? I said, I don't think I'm right. I think God's right. Whoa. Yeah, well, you need to argue with him. Because I'm just Dave. And if God says this, he's right. And if you don't agree with it, I guess you're wrong. Because those are the only two alternatives. Can you be sort of Christian? Kind of right? Almost good? Are those words that actually work together? Then look at our Christian culture when we're sort of Christian, kind of nice, almost good. And we consider that okay. See, there is more than one way to be right is a good way for you to get in trouble. Now, we're not talking about opinions here, whether you like rice or beans. You know, I don't know. If you start saying one of those is right, then you get the whole definition of right and wrong wrong. I mean, that's not what we're talking about. Those are more opinions about different things that don't really matter that much. We're talking about things that are absolute or things that aren't. And if you disagree with the absolutes that God says, then you're wrong. And if you go into life saying there's more than one way to be right, no, there isn't. Right is going to be right all the time. Wrong is going to be wrong. There's not more than one way to be right. I've had more people actually tell me that in the last few years about religion. There's more than one way to be right. There's more than one God. There's more than... Really? No, you're wrong. And one day you're going to find out you're wrong. Oh, you're arrogant. I'm not. Talk to God. See, I'm wearing a black sweatshirt. See, that's the way it is. Sorry. Like, you can believe whatever you want. And really, if you don't believe what's right, then you're wrong. And if you want to keep believing what's wrong, you're a fool. That's all. It's not that I'm mad at you or anything else. It just makes perfect sense. If you want to call this pink, it's not. Yeah, well, all of us think it's pink. Then you're all wrong. See, that's how that works. You have to understand there's not more than one way to be right. I will allow the Bible to reprove, rebuke, and exhort. See, that's the more intentional. When I see something in the Bible and my life doesn't match it, that's the reprove part. I'm going to look at it and I'm going to say, oh, that doesn't work. I need to... I'm going to let the Bible rebuke me. In other words, I'm going to let the Bible say, if I'm doing something wrong, I'm going to say, oh, I'm wrong. See, that's repentance. And then I'm going to let the Bible exhort me. Here's how you do it right. You know, it's very important that you see that that's the intentional step, not the other one. The other one gets you in trouble, and Satan wants you. Satan wants you to believe that you don't need mentoring. He wants you to believe there's more than one way to be right. Because then he gets you in that other cylinder. God did it all, so I have attained nothing. You notice down here, the Apostle Paul is saying, I want to live according to what I've attained. See, a lot of us think, well, I haven't attained anything, so I'm not living anyway. You know, no, you have. Actually, what you have to understand is you're a child of the King, and that actually means something. And the old illustration I have a lot is, I've been married 33 years, and I act married. See, if you act married, why do I act married? Because you are married. Oh, yeah, that's really cool. That's not hard to grasp. Why should I act like a child of the King? Because you are a child of the King. Oh, yeah, that's right. See, that makes sense. Now, wouldn't it drive you crazy and you probably have met men that act like they're not married when they are? Isn't that weird? That's not right. You see, in relationships, if you're in a relationship, you act like you're in a relationship. That's what you do. One of the worst things you guys can do is be dating some girl and then bring her somewhere and all your friends are there and don't introduce her. Act like she doesn't exist for a minute. Why don't you act like you actually like that girl you just brought over to your friends? Oh, I do like her. Well, why don't you act like it? Well, because my friends might make fun of me or... this doesn't work. Did that once. I was dating somebody in college and we had gone somewhere and I was coming back. And we were going to stop by the church where my dad was pastor. I needed to drop something off to him. And she was with me and I pulled in the parking lot. I said, I'll be right back. And I got out. She goes, wait a minute, what are you doing? I'm going to give this to my dad. I'll be right back. I've never met your dad. Yeah, I know. I'm giving this to him. See, I was in total another world. I was actually in a hurry. I just thought I'd give it to him and run out. She goes, stop. She got out of the congregation. I'm going to go meet him. Oh yeah, that too. Hit me in the head with a hammer. You know, that didn't go over well. Why didn't it go over well? Because I was acting like I wasn't with her. But I was with her. But I was acting like I wasn't. That's all Paul is saying. Are you really a Christian? Have you really responded to God's grace and His mercy and His love? Then why don't you act like it? Do you really? Are you really appreciative of His mercy? Then act like it. See, that's what He's saying. Only let us hold true, grab what we have attained. I'm already a child of God. Now I need to hold to that. Now the holding is a whole lot more difficult than the sliding down the cylinder. Satan just wants everything to be gray. Everything. No black and white. Everything's gray. No. There's black and white. And when I start being intentional in my life, I start positioning myself so that God will allow me to move down that funnel. And one day I'll drip out a disciple of His. But that's an intentional process. If any of you are hoping that happens accidentally, you came to camp this summer hoping, well, maybe while I'm here, something great will grab me and then my life will be different. I doubt it. Oh, something might grip you. But unless you're intentional about both learning here and changing here, and then intentional when you go home, a year from now you'll be back here and nothing would have been different. Intentionality is extremely important. And Satan does not want you that way. He wants you going with that flow. Next week, I'll keep going on Philippians because there's a lot more verses to talk about. I want you to keep seeing the contrast, how Satan would work, how God works. And seeing it through the eyes of someone like the Apostle Paul. Father, again, thank You for this morning and for the time we've been able to share. We pray that Your Spirit will speak to our hearts in Jesus' name. Amen. Any other announcements? Kenzie's back there.